Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time. Another review of all the latest J2 and J3 news and results is coming up. I'm John Steele in the host chair again this week, and my co-host is a familiar voice. It's James Taylor. James, how are you doing?
Hi John, I'm alright, thanks. Thanks for stepping in last week to talk to James about Ryukyu. It was nice to hear some positive Ryukyu chat.
Yes, no, very much. And I think, James and I did the trick, because obviously we'll talk about Ryukyu later. But yeah, they picked up a fine win, didn't they, against Kumamoto at the weekend. So I'd like to think that our pod played some small part in that. But James, I think I should be thanking you for coming onto the pod this week. We had a couple of other irons in the fire guest-wise. It felt a bit like transfer deadline day. We got people missing with fitness tests and holidays. It's summer holiday season, COVID in a couple of cases. And I know you've not been that well yourself last week or so. So yeah, thanks for coming in, and it's nice to chat. Before anybody else gets ill, James, we should talk about J2 news. Round 29 took place over the weekend, and we're going to talk about kind of three big games, three big results from the round. We're going to start at the top of the table, logically enough. Yokohama FC 0, Iwate 3, an astonishing home defeat for the leaders, who are still 2 points clear at the top because some other results went their way. None of the top three sides managed to win at the weekend. Just 9 minutes on the clock at Mitsuzawa when Iwate took the lead, Brazilian striker Morelato with a superb curling strike from outside the box on an Iwate counter-attack. The same player, Morelato, had a chance to make it 2-0 before the break, but blazed over the crossbar. And at the other end, Zane Isaka should have equalised for Yokohama, but sliced his chance wide of the far post. Right at the start of the second half, it was 2-0 to the visitors. Young Sota Kiri's cushioned pass set Tsubasa Yuge free inside the Yokohama penalty area, and he comfortably beat the goalkeeper Akinori Ichikawa for 2-0. And the game was up in the 65th minute when a pair of Yokohama defenders went for the same header, got in each other's way. This led to Brenner being set free, and as he entered the penalty area, he put in a shot that took a deflection on its way past Ichikawa for 3-0. And we should give Iwate's defence plenty of credit. They were excellent in this game, and in stoppage time, they produced a magnificent five-man block on the goal line to preserve their clean sheet. So there was at least one handball in there, by the way, but yeah. We'll let them off for effort, I think. I was thinking, how often do you see Omiya defending Despy on the goal line like that? I don't think you've never seen it before. So, Iwate's first win in six games then, since beating who else but Omiya, 6 games ago. And Iwate are 5 points clear of the drop zone in 19th place. For Yokohama FC, this was a first defeat in 12 matches since they lost 3-0 away at Niigata a couple of months ago. And we'll just mention the stats from this game, James, astonishing. About 72% possession for Yokohama FC and 500 passes. Iwate only managed 100 passes in the whole 90 minutes. So, a game of Pulis ball, or Akita ball for Iwate. James, Yokohama FC, Yokohama FC 0, Iwate 3. This a freak result, do you think? Or, should we be looking at what went wrong for Yokohama or what went right for Iwate? What do you think?
That's an interesting question. Was it a freak result or not? It was a surprise to see Iwate win with such a comfortable scoreline. We've talked before about Yokohama FC, saying they never looked really particularly convincing, but they've still been getting the results. And I think this perhaps was what happens when you're not convincing and you have an off day, and they were punished, and it was surprising because they were punished by a team that's so low in the table. But I think this also, it seems like more evidence that despite the fact that they get the occasional thrashing, Iwate actually do have some fight in them, which might be what separates them from teams that go down. It might be enough to keep them up. I thought that they looked really good on the counter, Iwate. For example, with the first goal, that was a counter-attack, and Yokohama FC left big gaps in midfield for Iwate to exploit. And for the second goal, no one went with Uge as he ran into the box. Heiner was following him, and then he got distracted by the ball, so Uge could continue his run unimpeded into the box. So he had a free shot on goal. And yeah, like you talked about, the two defenders got in each other's way to let Bredner in for his goal. So I think, yeah, this was just, maybe it was one of those things where all of Yokohama's unconvincing performances finally sort of came home to roost, and they had a bad defeat. They didn't even seem to create that much in the way of. Isaka had that shot, he skewed across the goal, and Saito missed from close. But apart from that, they didn't really seem particularly at the races, Yokohama. And what they did to Jeff the other week, right? Jeff had like 20 shots and lost 4-0. Yokohama scored from their 4 shots on goal or something like that. It seems like Iwate did the same to them. Just wait and then hit them on the counter. It worked really, really well. And I think, yeah, this will be concern for Yokohama. I think they kind of got away with it a bit because the other teams near the top didn't really take advantage of this slip up. But yeah, they should be concerned. But then they should have been concerned. So they should have been working on this for a while. So I think, they've obviously got to keep working on it. And I saw in the week they signed pod favorite Toa Yamane, who I really like. I think he's a really good player, but he's not going to help with this kind of defensive. Performance.
Yes, he wouldn't have tracked Tsubasa Yuge either, would he?
Well, because he's not supposed to be. He plays out on the wide on the left usually, doesn't he, or up front as a striker. So he wouldn't. And it's not like Yokohama are really short of goals either. So I don't know what the thinking is behind that, but yeah, this was a bad day for them and a great day for Iwate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's all fair comments. Yokohama FC, funny league leaders, because as you alluded to, they often sort of fail to convince or flat to deceive in matches. I think even in the previous round, they won 1-0 away at Tokyo Verdy, but only just. You know, they squeaked the 3 points out of that game, and it wasn't a very convincing performance. What makes me think that they might be okay this season is they do seem to be leading quite a charmed life in those top two places. Mm-hmm. Don't any time they slip up, the teams around them slip up as well. And if that mm-hmm. continues for another sort of 13 games, then they're going to end up getting promoted. But I agree. I've seen them quite a few times this season. Obviously, I live in Yokohama, so they're on the doorstep. And yeah, the amount of games where they've really convinced, even that 4-0 against Jeff a couple of weeks ago, that was more like a 2-0 game where they added a couple of goals on the counter-attack late on. So I think that the way that Shuhei Yamada has them playing is if they score first, you have to work really, really hard to get back into the match. Because they have a way of kind of shutting up shop and closing the gaps, and they play very. I think if you're a neutral, it looks very negative, but you know, very carefully, shall we say, very tactically. If they lose the first goal, they have a hard time. If you remember a few weeks ago, they let in the opening goal at home to Akita. And they had to really dig deep to try and get anything. I think they eventually equalised with the very last touch, didn't they? Koki Ogawa got the goal the very last touch. So if you can score first against Yokohama FC, it gives them a difficult problem. If they score first against you, it's really hard to get back into it. And in this game, it was just the fact, Iwate got that fantastic early goal from Morilato. Yokohama FC just couldn't organise themselves to get back into the game, I don't think. And we didn't mention COVID, James, in the lead-in, so we should mention now. I think Yokohama FC, I don't know if these players are necessarily out with COVID because it's kept private, but I know they've had a lot of positive test results recently. They haven't had to spend Brodersen in goal for the last couple of games, and they haven't had Koki Ogawa up front either. And I think from the games I've watched this season, I would say they are two of the three key players. I think Gabriel in the defence is the other one. They look a lot shakier at the back if he's not around. So I think if they can get Brodersen back and Koki Ogawa back soon, they'll be okay. But yeah, it was really interesting again when they concede the first goal. They have a hard time getting back into matches, and that's not something to expect to say about the team that's top of the table after 29 matches. And for Iwate, I mean, I don't have the stats in front of me, but any team that wins 3-0 away against a team that's at the top, they don't tend to get relegated, do they?
So
yeah, I mean, I think you're right to say they were hugely impressive in this game, although everything went right for them. I think the stats, you know, 9 times out of 10, a team with 28% possession and, you know, 4-5 times fewer passes than the other team is not going to win 3-0. So I'm still working out how they did that. It seems kind of magical result given the stats. But yeah, winning 3-0 against a team that's top of the table, well, I mean, you can't do more than that in terms of building confidence and pulling away from the bottom, can you? So I'd put them on the endangered list, but not the critical list at the moment, I think. So yeah, we're so well done to them. It was a fantastic win. Okay, talking of endangered and critical lists, James, we'll keep it moving. We're going to talk about another 3-0 away win, but I've got a feeling you might have a bit more to give us on this one. James, Kanazawa 0, Akita 3 from the weekend. Akita up to 18th now, 7 points clear of the drop zone. This was a first win in 14 matches for them, so absolutely huge for Blaublitz. Akita stunned Kanazawa with 2 goals in the space of 7 minutes in the first half. For the opener, Taira Shige did brilliantly to get away down the left flank. He took a shot that Kanazawa goalkeeper Yuto Shirai spilled, a very rare mistake from him. The grateful beneficiary was Daiki Kogure, who forced the loose ball over the line. That was in the 18th minute for 1-0. Shortly after that, Yuji Wakasa's deep cross to the back post was headed in by Tomofumi Fujiyama for 2-0. In the second half, Wakasa nearly added a third goal for Akita when he put in a fierce shot that rattled the crossbar but stayed out. But it was 3-0 just after the hour. Akita centre-back Jurato Ikeda showed amazing skill to daintily touch the ball past Yuto Nagamine, and then he cut it back for Shota Aoki to score easily. We should give Yuto Shirai some credit in the Kanazawa goal. He made a fine save late on from, I think it was Aoki again, with a header that would have made it 4-0. But yeah, it finished Kanazawa 0, Akita 3. I think that's 3 straight 3-0 defeats for Kanazawa, who are in 16th now. And in your words, James, you said they might be sleepwalking into trouble this season. So let's start with that. Kanazawa 0, Akita 3. James, are Kanazawa in trouble?
Yeah. What's the next match? yes, I think we are.
Don't sit on the fence, James.
three-nil losses in a row. Two of them at home. I don't think you can say anything other than we're in trouble. What's more concerning about those 3-0 losses is that we haven't created any really good goal scoring opportunities. The attack's completely dried up. The Niigata match a couple of weeks ago, our first shot on target was in the 91st minute, I think. Last week's match I didn't see at all because I wasn't well, and it seems like I made a good choice to be ill rather than watch it. this one again. There may be some mitigating circumstances because we didn't have regular starting right back Riku Matsuda, centre backs Honoya Shoji or Tomonobu Hiroe, midfielder Kazuya Onohara or Ryuhei Oishi or Shion Niwa, who are all regulars in the match day squad. So we had first ever start for centre back Kengo Kurogi and the second ever start for centre back Taiga Son, which shouldn't have been a problem because we had an experienced midfield and we had an experienced strike partnership. But the problem was the midfield did nothing to take the pressure off the defenders. They created nothing in the first half. And so when Akita took the lead, which was because the two centre-backs got caught out of position, Shirai made a mistake, which he doesn't very often, Akita took advantage. And before that, Akita defended really solidly. We know that Akita can do that. And they did it very well. And they took advantage. They took their chances. And yes, the first goal was the centre-backs caught out of position. The second goal was because central midfielder Matsumoto was out-jumped. And so far this season, Kanazawa have not won a game after going behind. We've managed to draw a few games after going a goal down. We've got nothing from any games where we've been two goals down. So at 24 minutes into this match, it was game over, basically, with the second goal went in. So there's no way that we're going to come back. We've got two really good strikers up in Hayashi and Toyoda, but they received no service whatsoever. No crosses into both of them, very good in the air. Barely any balls into feet because Akita are good at cutting them off, and also because the passing was poor, again, from the midfielders through to the strikers. This is a common problem. And things got a bit better in the second half. Nagamine came on as a half-time sub, and then Hiramatsu came on a bit later, but for some reason was playing in central midfield instead of on the wing. And they gave a bit more attacking impetus and put in some good crosses for Kyohei Sugiura, who came on as well as a striker, as a substitute. But just really, really disappointing. I mean, I think maybe the players who came in were unprepared due to a lack of game time and a lack of squad rotation in the previous 28 rounds. I don't know. But you've got to wonder why they were not prepared. I mean, not the players, but I mean the club as in general was not prepared for this eventuality. Mm. In the post game press conference or the interview, the interviewer asked Yanagishita something. He said, "Oh, you're 10 points clear of relegation now. What do you think about that?" And his response was, "We talked about relegation too much last year. I don't want to talk about it now." But I think if things continue like this, he's going to have to talk about it soon, because it seems like we're in another slump that we have every year that he doesn't know how to get us out of. He's just going to have to, it'll just be keep doing the same thing and hope that it comes right in the end. I think, yes, sleepwalking towards relegation. Conceding three goals every game isn't great, but I'm not really worried about the defence. I'm more worried about the attack, because there's nothing happening up front. Mm. It doesn't help that there's a thing at Kanazawa, they say there's a number 10 jinx. Every year, the player who gets the number 10 shirt leaves after a year. We had Yuki Kakita got it and he left. And Kei and Nakami got it and he left. Yuji Senema got it and he left. This year, Shintaro Shimada is wearing number 10. And I think the jinx is different this year, because instead of him leaving, I think he just can't be asked.
His motivation has left.
It barely tracks back to defend when Yanagishita is all about hard work both ends of the pitch. Well, his passing's dreadful. I don't see what he's contributing. I don't want to be one of those guys who starts having an irrational hatred of one of their own players, but I don't see what he's contributing at all this year. His passing, he tries all these fancy, like, neat little flick passes that never come off. And when he tries doing a proper pass, it just goes to the opposition instead of going to a striker. It's incredibly frustrating. Having said all that, we should say that Akita were really good. Akita, they had a plan, they stuck to it, and they won 3-0 away from home. Their first win in 14 games is excellent, an excellent result for them. Eased a lot of pressure. And I think it's kind of surprising that they went on such a long winless run, because I know they had players missing for injury and stuff, but they're still, I don't think they're that bad. They're not as bad as a 13-game winless run suggests. But Kanazawa had a 13-game winless run last year, and I remember a lot of games in that run, we actually played quite well, but were just unlucky. It's kind of the same with Akita. Like, they could have beaten Yokohama but conceded a 97th minute equaliser when perhaps the game should have finished a couple of minutes.
I think Martin Spivey might be typing that tweet as we speak. Yeah.
So I think Kanazawa had the same kind of thing, you know, 1-0 up against Iwata and then concede a 95th minute penalty to lose 2-1, that kind of thing. It happens, but now that they've ended that run and they've started to get players back, I think we'll see Akita start to move up the table a bit, back towards some mid-table safety. Mm. Because they're a really well-drilled, well-organized team. And I don't think that they will be in any real danger of going down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there are some, even though I think it's fair to say Yokohama FC and Kanazawa are having quite different seasons, probably headed in a slightly different trajectory. I thought there were some interesting parallels in these two games, and principally for me, and I don't mean to oversimplify football, obviously it's very complicated and has a lot of moving parts, but it seemed to me Yokohama FC didn't really look ready for what we know Iwate are good at. And Kanazawa, like you mentioned a few times in your kind of analysis, they didn't really seem ready for Akita either. Like, Iwate and Akita, they soak up a lot of pressure. They're very well organised. They have a organised backline, organised midfield that sits very deep. And when they get the ball out, away from you, they want to get it out quickly and they counter. Mm. And what you don't want to do is, you don't want to defend too high up against them, and you don't want to leave lots of spaces for them to counter into. And Yokohama FC made that mistake very early on. When they gave away the opening goal. And I thought Kanazawa a few times in this game, I mean, that chance to Taira Shige, as I mentioned, I thought he did really well to get away from left flank, but Kanazawa had the ball basically on their own halfway line. And there's no way that should have turned into a goal scoring opportunity, never mind a goal, you know, for an away team that's 13 matches without a win. So yeah, I thought maybe it's perhaps some tiredness, or I'm sure that there's a big difference between knowing what a team is good at and being able to stop them, I think. So that's perhaps I'm being a bit harsh on Yokohama and Kanazawa here. They perhaps did everything they could, but I was surprised at how comfortably Akita saw out that win against Kanazawa. And I think you're very confident that they're out of trouble. I still think they have the potential to go on a sort of winless run just because of the way that they play. But that third goal, Ikeda's touch, you know, for a centre-back to just kind of take the ball past another defender like that, you kind of, on the replay, I had to check, like, was that Ikeda? Was that the centre-back, you know, just kind of casually, you know, if that was, you know, I was watching Messi and Mbappe a couple of weeks ago, I think that a touch like that from them would have been replayed endlessly. So we should give poor old Jurato Ikeda some love, I think, for that one. But is that right then, James? You think Akita are safe now, 7 points clear of the drop zone pretty much? And Iwate, would you, I think Iwate still got work to do. Would you go along with that on Iwate?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that they're out of danger yet, but I think that they have the fortitude to stay up.
Okay. So we've got Iwate moving in the right direction, but not safe yet. Akita probably going to be safe. And I'll just ad lib for you. Kanazawa probably going to be safe, but in an awkward, unraveling all the hard work, all the good work from the first half of the season kind of way.
Yeah,
I suppose. Again. Yeah, never mind. Well, look, talking of, still having work to do, James, we'll move on to one more game for our pick of the week from round 29. Mito Hollyhock 1, Omiya Ardija 0. Not a classic game by any stretch of the imagination, but Omiya continuing to struggle, second bottom, and after Ryukyu's crucial win against Kumamoto, Omiya are only a point ahead of the bottom place team, aren't they? They haven't won any of their last 8 matches. And the goal that proved to be crucial here came in just the 8th minute. Too easy for Koshi Osaki, Mito's left back, to put in a cross. And too easy for an unmarked Yutaka Soneda to head in to make it 1-0. I think the main reason that the cross was so easy to be put in was that Osaki's opposite number, his marker, Riki Amotegi, just fell over. And that gave Osaki lots of extra time to measure the ball into the box. It should have been 2-0 early in the second half, but Mito's Fumiya Sugiura shot straight at Cole Shimura in the Omiya goal when he should really have scored. And Omiya's best chance came late on from Kanji Okunuki, who now and again remembers what a good player he actually is. He made a chance for himself but fired it over the bar. So Mito 1, Omiya 0 at full time. Mito safe as houses, in my opinion, in 10th in the table. But Omiya now 2 points adrift of safety. 2 points is only 2 points, so it's doable. But, James, they look very bad.
Yeah, I watched the highlights of this, and there's not much to say about it. But I think I can't... Well, first, on meat, though, I think, yeah, like you said, they're safe as houses. They're happily ensconced in mid-table where they belong, which... I remember they had quite a slow start to the season. I was a little bit worried about them early on, but they've come good and they're playing not as spectacularly as they have in previous seasons, but they're doing really well, I think. But Omiya, I'm not sure that the new manager has really made any difference. I can't see that things have improved tangibly for Omiya since Soma took over. They're still like this goal. They lost to a goal where bloke fell over, so it was a free cross, and the defenders didn't bother to mark the man at the back post who had a free header. They scored a goal, they lost 1-0. That's it's too easy. They're making it too easy for the opposition. I don't see any real improvement in terms of results, in terms of league position, in terms of performances, really, from what I've seen. It doesn't seem like anything is getting better. They didn't offer much going forward in this match. Plus, being Omiya, all the other results went against them. Ryukyu won, Akita won, Iwate won, Gunma drew, Yamaguchi drew, Tochigi drew, and Omiya lost. So, I don't really know what to say. I mean, it's the same things that we've been saying every week.
I think a phrase that I used, but you also used just then, James, was too easy. Yeah. And I think that's the sense that I get when I watch Omiya. Like, I'm not an Omiya supporter, but we have obviously lots of listeners and lots of friends who do support them. And I think that is the thing that when I see Omiya, it frustrates me, like, on their behalf. Is like they give up possession way too easily. They let the other team have the ball way too much. They give up chances too easily. They give up goals too easily. And that's a recipe for a long, hard struggle at the wrong end of the table, isn't it? And you mentioned, like, Yokohama FC, you know, every time they have a bad result, all the other results around them seem to go in their favour. Whereas for Omiya, it's the opposite. And I'm not that superstitious. I do think most of success in life, oh God, I'm sounding like a motivational speaker. You know, life and football is basically down to how much hard work you put in, right? Like, Yokohama FC might be luckier, but they're also, I think, working harder than a lot of the Omiya players. But I think Omiya, like, they really are having a season where, if you imagine having to write a season review just about them, it's punctuated now with these points that, like, are kind of red flags for relegation. Like, they've had two goalkeepers injured in the same match, an outfield player having to go in goal. They've had the chance to win a match with a 94th minute penalty, but missing it. And then now they've had, what's Naoki Soma said to them in the locker room before they go out? Right, let's just keep it tight, first 10 minutes. Yeah, don't fuck around, don't do anything wrong. And then the right back's just fallen over, with nobody around him, and that's allowed. And then that explains why the cross came in, but it doesn't explain why Sonida, not the tallest, most imposing guy in the world, is fair to say, he's completely free. You know, and the goalkeeper looks surprised, and the centre backs look surprised, and you can just repeat that pattern. If you contrast that with, like, Iwate having literally half of the team on the goal line in the last minute of a match where they're 3-0 up, trying to protect their clean sheet. Whereas with Omiya, it's like they're just... I still maintain there are plenty of good players in that team, but they're kind of a rabble in terms of organisation. And I think if you're Naoki Soma, that's what you're... That rabble is not a word that you'd associate with him. Disciplinarian coach, former national team defender. I was watching highlights of him. I was watching some World Cup 98, topical World Cup 98 highlights the other day, and I think it was him. He put in the cross, I think, that got Japan their first ever World Cup goal against Jamaica back in 98. So he knows what he's doing. He knows his football, basically, is what I'm saying. He knows a lot more than we do. But it's not working, and this is kind of the fourth. We're on the fourth coach in a row now at Omiya, where we're saying we can't see what impact the coach is having. It's not working. They go through loads of players, but it doesn't make any difference. Not working. So I just wonder if I don't think they're one of the two worst teams by any means in terms of on paper, but they're hard. It's too easy to play against them. It's too easy to score against them. It's too easy to beat them. And they do have this like litany of bullet point type relegated team episodes to recount, don't they? So I think they're in the table doesn't lie at this point. They're in big trouble, I think. Hope Omiya fans will carry on listening anyway. But go on, James.
Well, I was gonna say it's four managers in a row. We said we can't see what they're bringing, what's changing. They have loads and loads of players come and go. Still the same things happening, which suggests, as we have suspected, that there's something deeper. The problem goes much deeper than just the manager or the playing staff.
Mm.
And the other thing is, they've got good players. They've got a good manager who knows his football. But they've got a good squad on paper, but on the pitch they're rubbish. Really, aren't they?
Why is everybody jogging? The players are just jogging all the time. Sorry, go ahead. Yeah. But I just see so many players jogging around all the time.
Seems they're very blasé about the whole thing. And we were complaining a few weeks ago that he wasn't starting Kawata up front. He started Kawata up front in this match, but I don't recall Kawata featuring in the highlights package. I don't. Kikuchi, the other striker, had a couple of chances that he messed up.
Oof.
But there was nothing for Kawata. If you're going to play Kawata, you've got to get the ball to him. If you're not, it's the same with Kanazawa. If you're going to have strikers, get the ball to them so they can try and score. It's not just Kanazawa and Omiya, it's every team. That's what the strikers are for. Mm. You've got to get them the ball. They can't do it all themselves.
Mm. James Taylor, next Omiya manager. You heard it here first. Yeah,
and I could probably do it about as well as some of their previous managers. I could probably on my one leg score as many goals as Kanazawa have in the last three matches.
I think what I'm surprised about at Omiya is obviously you don't spend as much time checking Omiya's ticket prices on their website as I do, James, because it doesn't cross your mind to go along probably as often as it does mine. But ticket prices are expensive for Omiya. I've got a feeling that when they got relegated, they just kept their like J1 pricing because it's quite expensive for J2 even to get a ticket behind the goal. And if they get relegated, they are going to have to look at that. I don't think they can get away with keeping the same ticket prices in J3 that they had in J1. Mm. And people at that club are going to lose their jobs, not just players. Mm. People around the club are going to lose their jobs, and I don't really see that. I'm not saying the players don't care at all, because I don't know any of the players, so I don't know. But they don't really wouldn't you just like to see two of the players maybe in each other's faces, like a bit like David Batty and Graham Lasso, just some evidence that they're aware of the gravity of the situation, like the literal gravity of them being pulled down, to the bottom of the table. I just don't see any. Perhaps I'm old school or there's something wrong with him, but when players when Gen Shoji lost his shit in that Gamba match, it wasn't particularly edifying, but I could kind of see where he was getting at.
Yeah.
He really wants to win the football match, and if you see that people around you on your team are not, you don't think they've got that level, if you're the captain, it's your job to let them know that. Ideally that happens in the dressing room and not in front of the fans, but I don't think it hurts. It's like when players are substituted and they're not happy about it. Good. good. Players shouldn't be like, oh, good, I'm going off for a bath. They should be pissed off about that. The way that you show it is the issue. You know, you don't want you throwing your shirt at the manager's no good or whatever, or throwing the captain's armband on the floor. Okay, there's a problem. But I just don't see, like, Akita, okay, for the first 25 minutes, they had to battle to get their goals against Kanazawa. And Iwate had to work very hard to keep their lead and extend it against Yokohama FC. I want to see that same. I want to see Omiya's work rate high up, you know.
Yeah.
And I just don't really. They're not going to get out of it if Naoki Sama can't squeeze another. I mean, I was going to say 5%, but I think it's more like 25% out of that group of players. They're not going to get the job done. I mean, just as an illustration, I think Yuta Mikado has left right in this transfer window. Now he's a 35-year-old important midfielder, and where's he gone? He's gone to Ima Bari, the sixth in J3. So I mean. You know, that tells you something. Like, players are not leaving Omiya and going, like, they're not going on to bigger and better things right now. You know, so I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but they've got 13 games to find it. And it's probably worth mentioning before we close that they're only 2 points off. We've been burying them for the last 10 minutes. But they could win three games in a row and be, you know, on Mito's heels, couldn't they? So it's not impossible. But I think that just, for me, that just adds to the frustration. Of like, you know, there are some good players in the team. They're in terms of league position, they're not a million miles away. But when you see the performances, like, even though they're always 11 versus 11, they never have anybody sent off. The other team always seems to have an extra player. And the other team always seems to be playing like on, you know, a speeded up compared to them. And it's going to be impossible to get points when that's the case. And I don't understand. I don't understand why. But yeah, perhaps there are deeper issues, like you said. All right, James. I think we've cheered up Omiya supporters enough there.
Yeah.
For another week. So I'm sure they'll go on. I'm sure they'll get a good result next week.
Patreon subscription.
If you want more of this sort of thing, you know, don't listen to this on a Monday morning on your way to work. It's probably good advice. But all right, James, thanks for the insight on the big three games for the week. We'll say again, well done to Iwate, Akita, and Mito for their wins. And they all played pretty well, especially the Tohoku teams who had tough away games and got those impressive results. We'll take a quick break to recharge our batteries after those rants. In a moment, you'll hear me round up the rest of the round 29 J2 action, and then James and I'll be back together. We'll look ahead to the round 30 games coming up this weekend. J2 Extra Time. Hi everyone, me again, rounding up all of the other games from round 29 in J2. As mentioned in part 1, despite losing at home to Iwate, Yokohama FC are still clear at the top of the table. That's because none of the sides in the top 8 managed to pick up 3 points last weekend. Second place Niigata are 2 points behind Yokohama after their big match away at fourth place Nagasaki finished 2-2. Now, Nagasaki made a great start here, and we're ahead in just the 14th minute. Edgar Junio scoring for the 5th game in a row with an improvised toe poke inside the area after he'd taken the ball past the Niigata backline with a very clever touch. The hosts went close to doubling their advantage through Asahi Uenaka. He had a goal correctly ruled out for offside and then slammed a shot against the post. I'm not sure if the goalkeeper got a touch on the ball, but if he did, it was an amazing save. And then Niigata hit Nagasaki with a sucker punch equaliser in first half stoppage time. Eitaro Matsuda played in Soya Fujiwara and he swept the ball into the net from 10 yards. At the start of the second half, Niigata then went in front. In the 50th minute, a flowing attack ended with Ryotaro Ito setting up Koji Suzuki for a cool finish from about 8 yards. Nagasaki fought back again though, and equalised thanks to an Edgar Junior penalty on the hour. Takashi Sawada was tripped by the unfortunate Fujiwara to earn the spot kick, and yes, Junior converted it with no problem at all. Despite some late Nagasaki pressure, the game finished Nagasaki 2, Niigata 2. Nagasaki's impressive unbeaten run continues, but they're 8 points behind Niigata and the automatic promotion places. Third place Sendai were also made to work very hard for a point away from home. They ended up drawing 2-2 at Yamaguchi after captain Hirofumi Watanabe's 90th minute equaliser for the home side. Yamaguchi had taken the lead midway through the first half after a bad giveaway from Sendai defender Yota Sato. He gifted possession to Kazuma Takai back at Yamaguchi this transfer window after his disappointing spell at Mito. Takai crossed for young Takaya Numata to take a shot on goal, and his effort took a deflection that wrong-footed Sendai goalkeeper Daichi Sugimoto and went in. But Sendai turned things around with two goals in just 4 minutes. In the 34th minute, Sato headed down a Motohiko Nakajima corner for Masato Nakayama to score from close range. And then in the 38th, Keimen Togashi produced a fantastic header in off the crossbar from 12 yards to put the high-flying visitors 2-1 up. Koji Hachisuka provided the cross. Yamaguchi came at Sendai as best they could in the second period, and after one corner in particular, the ball came back off the post from a Yamaguchi header, and it would have been forced in if not for a fine save from Sugimoto in the Sendai goal. It seemed that Sendai were going to hold on for all 3 points until another corner kick in the 90th minute. It was flicked on at the near post by Daisuke Takagi, Watanabe to bundle home inside the 6-yard box. So it finished Yamaguchi 2, Sendai 2. Sendai wobbling just a little. That's one win in their last 4 games now. They're 3 points behind second place Niigata. For Yamaguchi, this was a welcome point that ended a run of 3 straight defeats. They're in 17th, 7 points clear of the relegation zone. 5th place Okayama drew 1-1 at home to Jeff United with a pair of Tiagos on the score sheet. Jeff gave their hosts an early scare when they hit the post via a Yusuke Kobayashi header, but Okayama took the lead 10 minutes into the second half when Thiago Alves, on as a sub at the interval, headed in a deep cross from Ryosuke Kawano, and Okayama held that one goal advantage until 13 minutes from the end, when new Jeff signing Shuto Tanabe, the defender on loan from Kawasaki Frontale, was involved in launching a brilliant counter-attack. Tanabe intercepted an Okayama pass on the edge of his own penalty area and then strode forward with the ball, carrying it about 60 yards before feeding Solomon Sakuragawa on the left-hand side of the penalty area. Sakuragawa's low cross was inch-perfect for the other Thiago on the pitch, Thiago De Leonso, to tap in for 1-1. And that's how the game finished. Okayama 1, Jeff United 1. Okayama's long unbeaten run continues, but they are now 10 points off the automatic promotion places. Jeff, Chiba are in 11th, and if we're being honest, they can probably start planning for another season in J2 in 2023. 1 point behind Okayama, a 6th-placed Kumamoto, who were stunned by a 2-0 defeat away at bottom side FC Ryukyu. The hero for the home side was their new Ghanaian forward, Saddam Suley, who set up the opener and scored the second on his full debut here after making a sub-appearance in the previous game. In the 36th minute, Suley rose to flick on Danny Carvajal's goal kick into the path of Takuma Abe, who beautifully controlled the ball and lobbed the unrushing Kumamoto keeper Yuya Sato for 1-0. Just an absolutely brilliant finish and well worth checking out online if you haven't already. Just 3 minutes into the second half, Sully produced a towering header from Katsuya Nakano's cross to make it 2-0, and that was enough for Ryukyu to take all 3 points. Ryukyu 2, Kumamoto 0 the final score. A first home win for new Ryukyu boss Nacho Fernandez as their revival under his leadership continues. They're unbeaten in 5 games and now just a single point behind second bottom Omiya Ardija. Elsewhere, 7th-placed Machida lost 1-0 away at Yamagata thanks to a goal from Akira Disaro, the bald eagle, midway through the first half. Both sides had chances early on in this game, with Machida's Shusuke Ota denied by a great block from Masaaki Goto in the Yamagata goal, whereas at the other end, Koki Fukui saved well from Disaro. But the crucial goal came when Disaro swept in Kota Yamada's low cross from just inside the penalty area on the right flank. Machida almost replied before half-time with Ota, impressive as usual, denied again. This time he slammed a thunderbolt against the Yamagata crossbar from an acute angle, but the ball didn't go in. And that's how the game finished. Yamagata 1, Machida 0. Machida 2 points off the playoffs, and Yamagata a further 3 points behind them in ninth. There was plenty of excitement and another 2-2 draw in Kyushu, as Oita Trinita and Tokyo Verde produced a high-scoring stalemate. All of the goals came in the first half in this game. Verde took the lead in the 18th minute when Ren Kato powered home a header from a Ryota Kajikawa corner. Just 2 minutes later, though, Oita were level. Kazuki Fujimoto seemed to be trying to square the ball across the 6-yard box, but it squirmed under the Verde goalkeeper Mateus and went over the line for 1-1. It looked like an own goal to me, so I think Fujimoto's done very well to claim that one and be credited with it. But yes, 1-1 straight away. Verde went back in front 5 minutes before the break when Ryoga Sato brilliantly controlled a long ball from Boniface Nduka and then set up Koki Morita to kind of slide the ball into the bottom corner from about 16 yards for 2-1. But just like with Verde's opener, they conceded an equaliser almost straight away. This time in the 43rd minute, a slick Oita attack ended with Arata Watanabe playing in Hiroto Goya, and he poked the ball into Matias's bottom left-hand corner from about 16 yards. So at 2-2 at half-time, Matias went some way to redeeming himself with a great save from Keita Takahata in the second half as Oita threatened, and it finished Oita 2, Tokyo Verde 2. Oita in 8th place, just 3 points off the playoff zone, and Verde are in 12th. There were a pair of 1-1 draws to round off the match day, so let's start with Gunma 1, Kofu 1. The visitors earning a point with a late equaliser from Kazushi Mitsuhira. Gunma made a very positive start here. Shu Hiramatsu somehow managed to hit the post from about 1 yard out, but luckily for him he was offside, so his blushes were spared somewhat. When Gunma took the lead in the 15th minute though, Hiramatsu was the scorer. A very inventive corner routine saw Hiroto Hatao put a high ball into the Kofu box. Yuzo Iwakami headed on for Hiramatsu to nod in. In the second half, Kofu went close to an equaliser when Bruno Paraiba hit the top of the Gunma crossbar with a header. But the away side did draw level 8 minutes from time thanks to Mitsuhira's fine header from a deep left-wing cross. A special mention as well for Mitsuhira's incredible hair, by the way. I'm not sure what look he's going for, but the kind of overweight toy poodle slapped on top of some kind of hairband is doing it for him at the moment. But it finished Gunma 1, Kofu 1. Gunma in 20th place, 2 points ahead of the second bottom side at Omiya. Kofu are in 14th. They're one of a group of 4 teams on 35 points. Two other sides in that 35-point group, Tochigi and Tokushima, drew 1-1 at Kanseki Stadium. You could call this the Nishiya Derby, with Yuki Nishiya on the bench for Tochigi and his brother Kazuki on the bench for Tokushima for this game. And both players ended up with an assist late on, but defences were on top for most of the game. The best chance of the first half fell to Tochigi's Hayato Kurosaki in stoppage time at the end of the first period, but Jose Aurelio Suarez in the Tokushima goal made a superb block. In the second period, Tokushima looked the more likely to score. Tochigi goalkeeper Shuhei Kawata made a pair of excellent saves from Kazunari Ichimi, but a Tokushima goal eventually came in the 73rd minute when Kazuki Nishiya fizzed the ball across the face of goal. It struck the Tochigi defender Carlos Gutierrez on the arm and went in for an own goal. So Tokushima 1-0 up with not much time left. It seemed like that goal might earn them 3 points. But as we've discussed, Tokushima love a draw, don't they? And in the 87th minute, Yuki Nishiya got to the byline and cut the ball back for rookie forward Ko Miyazaki, wearing a black protective face mask for this game, and Miyazaki forced the ball in from 6 yards for 1-1. And that's how the game finished. Tochigi 1, Tokushima won. So, yes, not much change in the table for either side after that. All right, that's all from me for round 29, I think. Please stay tuned. In a moment, you'll hear me in conversation with James. We're looking ahead to the round 30 fixtures coming up this weekend. Welcome back, everyone. I think that's all of the round 29 action sorted out as best we can. So, yeah, James is back with me. We're going to look ahead to the round 30 games coming up at the weekend. James, I'm going to give you games in three blocks this time in an attempt to make sense of what's going on. So for round 30, the majority of the games are on Saturday, August the 6th, four games at 6 p.m. and four games at 7. Maths is my weak point, but I think that makes eight games in total. So we'll talk about the 6 p.m. games as one block, James, if that's okay. Iwate in 19th, they're hosting fifth place Okayama. Tokyo Verdy host bang in form Nagasaki, who are in fourth. Bottom side, but you know, kind of resurgent Ryukyu go away to 14th placed Kofu. And second place Niigata, who are wobbling just a little bit at the moment, host Tokushima, the draw specialists of the division, who are in 13th. James, could you pick out a game from the 6 p.m. kickoffs that you think looks enticing?
Well, that Niigata Tokushima looks interesting because, like you said, Tokushima draw specialists. They're six games unbeaten, but most of those have been draws. They're hard to break down. It'll be interesting to see if Niigata can do that, especially as Niigata had a couple of losses and a draw in the last few weeks, and they need to keep the gap to Sendai and to keep up with Yokohama above them. So I think that one looks tasty, but I'm also interested in Kofu against Ryukyu because Ryukyu are five games unbeaten. Although they're still bottom, but they've closed the gap significantly. And does seem like things have turned a bit of a corner for them based on what I've seen over the last few weeks and based on what James was saying last week. So I'll be interested to see how they get on against a Kofu team who have done nothing this year.
Yeah, I think you're right. I was thinking the same thing for Ryukyu. If they can extend their unbeaten run, that's going to just pile the pressure on Omiya and the teams above them, isn't it? And Tokushima, I'm expecting Niigata to win that match, but I think Tokushima are no slouches, and it wouldn't surprise me if they give Niigata some problems. So, okay, how about the 7 p.m. matches then? Four more games to preview. Leaders, Yokohama FC, visit second bottom Omiya. It's 7th against 8th as Machida host Oita. 3rd place Sendai, also on a bit of a wobble. One win in their last four. They go to another out-of-form team in Kanazawa, who are 16th. And Yamaguchi are hosting Yamagata in the other game. James, I suppose we better talk about Kanazawa Sendai.
Yeah, well, that's going to be 3-0 to Sendai. And Kanazawa only scored three goals in six games in July, so it's concerning. The Kanazawa will be wearing their special summer kits. This game's going to also have the singing sections, like the game against Akita did as well. So it should be a good atmosphere, but that might change if we go behind early, which we probably will. I'm not looking forward to it. Sendai won the other match 4-1 earlier in the season, so I mean they're the bit of a wobble, but they're still the leading scorers in the league. So I expect that to see them fairly comfortably home. I'm quite interested in Machida against Oita. He says 7th against 8th. They both got playoff aspirations. But Machida's form has been patchy over recent weeks. But Oita Oita kind of slipped under the radar a bit, haven't they? But they're they're doing all right, I think, kind of hanging on to the playoff race. And also a little bit worried for Omiya, because I would imagine that Yokohama FC will be desperate to bounce back after losing 3-0 at home. And I think they may take that out on Omiya.
Oof. Yeah, I think, well, on that match, I think if Koki Ogawa is back and Sven Brodersen is back for Yokohama FC, that changes the equation slightly. I will say for Omiya, Yokohama FC are not an unbeatable side, but they are a hard-working one. And Omiya, they need to, if they can match Yokohama FC's work rate, there's a chance of a decent contest in that game. It could go either way. But if Omiya, like you mentioned, Kanazawa probably will let in an early goal. If Omiya go behind early and they can't just work hard, then there'll be no chance for them in that game. So I think it has the potential to be interesting, but I'm not prepared to commit and say it actually will be. I think it depends a little bit on, you know, how much running Omiya can actually do and whether they can keep it 0-0 for long. Match against Oita, I agree. I think both, I think last playoff place is up for grabs, but it's going to need a lot of wins, isn't it, between now and the end of the season. So yeah, Machida, Oita, can either of them kind of, get a little bit closer to that sixth spot can be interesting. The games on Sunday, James, a bit less exciting, I think, as a neutral, if it's okay to say that. 6 p.m, Akita against Mito, and then two games at 7 o'clock, Gunma against Jeff Chiba, and sixth place, Kumamoto. They're hosting Tochigi, who are 15th, but are unbeaten in four games. Perhaps less thrilling on paper, the Sunday games, James, or is there one that you like the look of, or you could recommend?
Yeah, I think less thrilling maybe, but I think each of them's got kind of interesting aspects. I mean, Akita finally won a match, so they'll be buoyed by that, and we'll look to take that and create a bit of a run of results and push themselves up the table. Gunma also have managed to put two results together, having not won for months. So that, again, they desperately need to keep doing that, because they're in danger. And then, yeah, Tochigi is still not really safe, so they need to keep their good run. And Kumamoto want to bounce back from kind of a surprise loss away to Ryukyu last week. So I think each of those games has got kind of interesting aspects to it. But none of the kind of blockbuster matchups that we've seen on Saturday.
Yeah, I feel like revenge has been a kind of undercurrent in this pod. I don't know why we're going sort of like, you know, it's like the third movie in the trilogy kind of vibe. Perhaps it's because we're entering the final third of the season. You know, we've got that Return of the Jedi vibe. I'm not sure, but yes, okay. When I start talking about Star Wars, James, that usually means it's time for me to go and have a lie down. So, thanks for the previews and all the analysis. It was good to talk to you, even a bit unexpected this week. So thanks for stepping in at short notice. Always good to talk, and I hope Kanazawa can get themselves out of that rut against Sendai the weekend. But I think from James and I, that's all for now. We'll recede for the moment, but yeah, please stay tuned, because J2 Talk has finished for this week. In a moment, Mike Innes is going to be along. He has all the J3 latest in J Talk Short Corner. So enjoy your weekend football. But yeah, stay tuned. Here comes Mike. J Talk
Extra Time. Hello, everyone, and welcome to J Talk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode, I'll be looking back on the matches in round 19, as well as previewing the two rearranged games coming up this weekend. Straight into the action this week, and there were six round 19 games on Saturday the 30th of July, and there was a significant twist to the J3 promotion race at the Fujieda Sports Park, where Fujieda MyFC emerged triumphant against erstwhile leaders Kagoshima United to move into second place. And to claim that victory, MyFC had to recover from the worst possible start, conceding with only 73 seconds on the clock. Inevitably, it was Rei Yonezawa who got the goal, ghosting in behind Keisuke Ogasawara and Tojiro Kubo to receive a long ball and beating Kei Uchiyama from the tightest of angles. Both keepers were called into action before there was any further score, Kagoshima's Fuma Shirasaka doing well to keep out a full-blooded effort from Jun Suzuki, while Uchiyama produced an athletic save to stop Corky Anita's long-range chip from falling under the bar. My FC pulled level in the 33rd minute, Kubo robbing Atsushi Satsukawa and crossing for Taisuke Mizuno, whose first shot was blocked by Kenta Hirose, but whose second found its way past Shirasaka and in. 3 minutes before the break, Kagoshima again lost possession in a critical area. This time, Kazuya Tsunamori tried to advance out of defence, but was put under pressure by Masahiko Sugita. Suzuki came away with the ball, he sent it out to the right-hand side, and Kubo, who cut inside Satsukawa and curled it into the far corner. Uchiyama made a vital intervention to preserve Fujieda's lead with 9 minutes left, racing off his line to block Shunsuke Yamamoto's shot, and it ended Fujieda 2, Kagoshima 1. Daisuke Sudo's MyFC now well and truly in contention. Kagoshima have lost 3 of the last 6 and slipped down to 3rd. And there was more promotion-related drama at Katare Toyama, where the visitors were Iwaki FC. Toyama took the lead on 11 minutes in extraordinary circumstances. Makoto Rindo launching a free kick from well inside his own half that sailed past bemused visiting keeper Daiki Sakata and into the top corner. Did Rindo mean it? I think he did. I also think there was a serious lapse in concentration on the part of Sakata. From then on, Iwaki were on the front foot in search of an equaliser, but with Toyama goalkeeper Genki Yamada on typically good form, there seemed to be no way through. Even when they got past Yamada, the woodwork denied Iwaki, Shu Yoshizawa thumping a header against the post from a cross by Riku Saga, Rei Ieizumi striking the bar with a shot from just outside the area. But with 3 minutes to go, Katare hearts were broken as Masaru Hidaka swung in a high ball, Yoshizawa chested it down, and Ryo Anita finished brilliantly from 8 yards. Final score, Toyama 1, Iwaki 1, and with the fight for promotion places shaping up as it is, how vital will this 2 points dropped turn out to be at the end of the season? Katare almost held out but didn't quite have the quality or resilience. Iwaki dogged in their determination after conceding a freak early goal. They're top on goal difference and with a game in hand. Elsewhere on Saturday, at the Axis Bird Stadium, Gainare Tottori gained revenge for their 3-0 defeat at FC Gifu in May. There was a noisy Gifu contingent among a crowd of just over 3,000, but those travelling fans saw their team fall behind in the 13th minute, a simple punt over the defence, setting up Ryosuke Tamana to hit the byline and pull it back for Daichi Ishikawa to finish off the underside of the bar. Having scored his first ever pro goal last time out, Gainare central midfielder Taiki Arai thought he'd have another go in the 36th minute when he picked up possession on the halfway line, advanced unimpeded to 30 yards from goal and sent a looping effort over Chohan Ono and inside the far post. Gifu offered precious little going forward and conceded a third midway through the second half, the heart of their back line sliced open by a through ball from Tamara for rookie striker Ryusei Takao, who evaded a half-hearted effort from Ono and scrambled the ball over the line for his first J-League goal. A bad day for Ono got worse in injury time when his defence again failed to close down a run by Arai, who moved to within 25 yards from goal and sent in a low shot that sneaked through the keeper's hands and into the bottom corner. Final score, Tottori 4, Gifu 0. Gainare's biggest league win for nearly 4 years, only their fourth of the season so far. They played an up-tempo game but looked like world beaters against a lamentable Gifu whose creaky defence was their undoing once again. AC Nagano Parseiro left it until the 93rd minute but managed to snatch a win at Kamatamari Sanuki, which means Yuki Stouff's team moved to within 5 points of the promotion places. For the second game running, it was Ryoji Fujimori who got the last gasp goal, getting himself on the end of a high ball from Hayate Sugi and showing great composure to head over Takuya Takahashi and under the bar. Parseiro had twice gone close at the end of the first half, Hiroki Yamamoto having a shot cleared off the line by Sanuki's ex-Nagano defender Genichi Endo, and a Masaki Miyasaka free kick kept out only by Takahashi diving full length to tip it round the post. Kamatamari packed the defence in an attempt to hold on to the point, having 9 men in the area at the moment Takahashi got a hand to keep out Carlos Duke's 90th minute shot, but they couldn't keep out Fujimori and it ended Sanuki 0, Nagano 1. Kamatamari firmly ensconced in the lower reaches of the table and set up for this match like a lower division side. Parseiro now possessed of a mentality which gives them an urgent compulsion to try and catch the teams above them. With rather less riding on it, the mid-table game between Giramantsi Kita Kyushu and Azul Claro Numazu was also settled by a single goal, scored by the home side's Yuki Nakayama just after the half hour, when he flicked Mitsunari Musaka's low shot in such a way as to wrong foot Numazu keeper Hiromu Musha. Little goalmouth action in this one. Final score, Kita Kyushu 1, Numazu 0. Giramantsi's recent upturn in form putting clear ground between them and the bottom six. Azul Claro didn't get enough players forward to turn their half chances into goals. It ended level at the Toho no Minna Stadium between Fukushima United and FC Imabari. The pinks against the blues when the host's summer uniform is taken into account. Fukushima went in front midway through the first half, Junya Takahashi getting himself on the end of Uheiji Uehata's long ball, evading the challenge of Tomoya Ando and beating Shu Mogi with his shot. 8 for the season now for Takahashi. Imabari's equaliser came with the last action of the first half, 21-year-old centre-back Hayato Teruyama netting his first ever J-League goal, a low free kick that made its way through a crowded penalty area and beat Kaito Yamamoto at the near post. With 5 minutes left, another defender, Fukushima's Kazuki Dohana, hit the bar with a long-range effort, and shortly afterwards, Imabari's new Polish striker, Filip Piszczek, scuffed his shot, missing the chance to crown his debut with a goal. Final score, Fukushima 1, Imabari 1. Something of a low-energy affair in the summer heat, but Fukushima at least managed to avoid defeat after they'd brought to an end their losing run in round 18. 6 without loss now for Imabari, and with the signing of Piszczek and former Omiya Aradija captain Yuta Mikado, they strengthened the squad for the second half of the season. The remaining 3 matches were all on Sunday the 31st, when Matsumoto Yamaga threw away the chance to go clear at the top of the table as a result of a stunning home loss to lowly Vanrari Hachinohe. Yamaga coach Hiroshi Nanami made 6 changes to the side that beat Fukushima in the last game, giving J-League debuts to 17-year-old Sora Tanaka up front and 20-year-old goalkeeper Shoma Kanda. Kanda's opposite number Kazuki Hattori made a handful of saves and Matsumoto came close to scoring in the 73rd minute when Ryuhei Yamamoto hit the post with a drive from outside the box. But overall, the home side looked rushed and more than a little panicky as the realisation dawned that they were heading for defeat. The only goal of the match came 9 minutes into the second half. Vanrare centre-back Shuya Akematsu getting to Koichi Miyao's corner ahead of Taiki Miyabe and glancing it inside the post. Final score, Matsumoto 0, Hachinohe 1. Definitely not the sort of result that wins promotion for a team like Yamaga. While for Vanrare, the question is, can they build on their first away win of the season? If you're thinking it's getting pretty congested at the top of J3, you'd be right. And another team looking like credible challengers are Ehime FC, whose home victory over YSCC Yokohama means they have 6 wins in the last 7 games. There were half chances early on for YSCC, Shunta Kawabe's electric pace taking him through on goal before he stumbled, enabling Shuma Mihara to steal possession. And Atsushi Kikutani's left-footed curler drawing a fine save out of Kenta Tokushige. But just after the hour, Ehime took the lead, and for fans of the incisive counter-attack, this was a classic of the genre. Takashi Kondo got a touch on a YSCC corner kick. He and Motoki Ohara quickly exchanged passes and both hurtled upfield, with Kondo arriving in the opposition box and 13 seconds after the YSCC corner, dispatching his shot past Ryosuke Sagawa. If that was sublime, mention must be made of some J3 ridiculousness in the 62nd minute. Sagawa passing the ball straight to Ohara, whose improvised chip went back over the YSCC keeper but struck the outside of the post for a goal kick. Ehime nevertheless made the points safe via a fine team move of which Shigeru Yokotani was at the heart. The veteran also going on to convert Shunsuke Motegi's cross from the left-hand side. Final score, Ehime 2, YSCC 0. Pre-season speculation that Ehime this year in J3 look better than last year in J2 starting to appear a pretty solid theory. YSCC still finding it hard to compete. And finally, for round 19, Tegevajaro Miyazaki brought to an end their 7-match losing streak, but did so in pretty lacklustre fashion at home to another out-of-form side, SC Sagamihara. Not many clear chances in this one, and those there were fell to the visitors, such as in the 57th minute when Jungo Fujimoto played a clever ball into the area. Tsubasa Ando ran onto it and got in a close-range shot blocked bravely by Shunsuke Ueda. And then 9 minutes later, when Ueda got a hand to Shogo Nakahana's low cross, the loose ball being ballooned over the bar by Riku Tanaka. If you don't put those away, you don't win games, and Sagamihara definitely weren't going to win this one after their defender Ryoma Ishida was red-carded for a professional foul on Takuma Sonoda. Final score, Miyazaki 0, Sagamihara 0. Dark days for Tegevajaro, and they are now looking a poor side. Sagamihara just needed to find the net, but to the exasperation of their fans, they could not. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 19, noting that Iwaki, Matsumoto, Imabari and YSCC all have a game in hand. With a focus now on the promotion race, the top 6 teams are Iwaki, Fujieda and Kagoshima, all with 38 points. Then it's Matsumoto with 37, Toyama 35, and Ehime 34. At the other end of the table, the bottom 4 are Sanuki in 15th with 17 points, then it's Hachinohe with 16, Tottori 15, and still bottom with 8, YSCC. Just time now for a quick look ahead to this weekend, which was scheduled to be a mid-season break with no J3 fixtures in the calendar. Now, though, it's being used for 2 matches that were postponed for COVID-related reasons. So on Saturday the 6th of August, it's the round 17 game between Imabari and YSCC. And on Sunday the 7th, it's the potentially vital round 18 game, first against fourth, Iwaki against Matsumoto. There'll be coverage of these matches as normal next week, and the regular J3 schedule picks back up again with round 20 on Saturday the 13th and Sunday the 14th. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.